Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Hope you're having a great week. Happy New Year to everybody.
Just ask everyone how they're doing, like they can answer. And they can.
Well, maybe they're driving along and they're like, oh, doing pretty good, Rob. Thanks.
Oh, that's so sweet. That makes me so happy to hear. I'm happy that you're doing it. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Rob. How are you? How's California?
Should hold acquaintance be forgot.
There it is. And what did you do to bring in the new year?
Oh, it was very boring. No, it wasn't boring. It was nice. My father and mother and I, we watched CNN.
That's adorable.
Well, because it's Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen.
I love Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen. Yeah, they're great
and funny. Yeah. But my favorites, though, are Don Lemon and Brooke Baldwin getting wasted in New Orleans.
Wait, what? What?
Yeah, so they said they're really the reason to watch the show. No offense to Andy or Anderson. But the reason to watch the CNN show is because Brooke Baldwin and Don Lemon are down in New Orleans, and they get wasted. They're a little tipsy. They are wasted and having the best time of their lives.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
Like Don Lemon did a Wendy Williams impression.
You didn't.
Yeah, exactly. And then like Brooke Baldwin told like everybody how she used to try to get Don Lemon laid at different bars on New Year's Eve. Like it was, they had a good time.
I love it.
They had a really good time. So I had a good time because they had a good time. But it was really, really fun. What did you do?
We hung out with Sutton's family. Sutton's mom is in town, my wife. And we hung out with her family, the Crawfords in Soho. They grandparents live on Mott Street. So we all hung out there and we're together with family. And we had the TV on in the background. I don't think we had CNN on. But it was fun. It's a great time with the family because they're so lively and spirited. And they're all hippies. And so there's always music playing and people dancing. And
how fun.
It's really fun.
Yeah, that's really well, fun. I want to have. Why can't I? Well, I was not invited.
Hey, you know what? Next time, come on over. Next time the Crawfords have a party, I'm bringing you. Definitely. Because people listen. So many people talked about the Frank Rich interview, actually.
Oh, really?
And they're not theater people. One was the head librarian for NYU. These are family friends. But they were like, oh, that Frank Rich interview was really, really fun. So good job on that, Rob. And it was cool. Because I think a lot of people listen to that interview that don't usually listen to our pod.
Oh, great. And a big thank you to Frank Rich for being kind enough to take time out of his busy schedule to talk to us. And then was kind enough to ask for episodes because he was like, I think what you guys are doing is amazing. So thank you, Frank Rich.
Yeah.
He'll be a nice contrast if people want to listen to Frank Rich and our John Simon episode one after another. Which will be coming
up,
folks.
Isn't that interesting? That is fascinating. That because we really did, you guys. Frank Rich and John Simon. Apples and oranges there. Ooh.
Yeah, actually, apples and lemons because lemon is bitter.
That is a very good one.
Yeah,
that is,
thank you. Is a good, can I thank somebody on air?
Yes, please.
like I don't know the rules. Can I thank somebody?
I will let you do that, Rob.
Thank you. I'm a guest on your show. oh boy, I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, Ed. Ed Peistrup, P-E-I-S-T-R-U-P, Peistrup, Peistrup, Ed.
Peistrup.
And I'm so sorry. It was so kind.
What did Ed do?
Well, on one of the last episodes that we talked on, we asked what was our comfort food, and I said mine was Ben and Jerry's. Well, Ed reached out to me and said he works for Ben and Jerry's, and he sent me
what?
He sent me ice cream coupons.
Oh my! Ed, that is so amazing.
Right?
Oh my god.
He said based on our recommendations, his next show is going to be The Prom. So.
That is really, really so random, and I love it. In the same spirit, I want to give a shout out to a listener as well that reached out to me, sent me an email through my website, and she's I'm going to mess up her last name as well. So Claudia, please forgive me, but her last name is. But I think I have a bigger reason. Her last name is Claudia B J E R R E. So I don't even I'm not even maybe the J is silent. I don't know, but she Claudia wrote to me and said I have a collection of old summer stock programs, including the Kenley players. please let me know if you guys want them, and I'm happy to send them to you. So I was like, yes, please. Yes! Thank you so much, Claudia. So we have some Kenley player, because that's something you don't see very often, is summer stock, you know, programs from that era. And we talk about
Kenley player
so much, but it's just good for research. And that's so kind. So thank you so much for that, because that's good information. And we love discovering new things and presents.
We love presents.
Yeah.
I love presents. That's amazing.
Yeah, very nice. So thank you to Ed and to Claudia.
Yeah, my God. Thank you all. And once again, thank you. We have more people tweeting that we should have been on that Playbill top Ooh. 7 podcast list. So thank you Ooh. All. Somebody, awesome. One of somebody actually tweeted Felicia herself and said, this is why. So
I mean, I don't want to get banned from Playbill either. But
you know. We're not. First of all, I don't think we're making anybody's list.
No.
Oh, who wants to go first? I was looking at mine. That's why.
Oh, you want to go? No, you go first. Go for it.
Okay. I apologize to everybody in advance, because this is a very visual favorite thing. And I will post photos of this so everybody understands what I'm talking about. And listeners, I need your help. I need your help. Kevin, are you aware that Playbill, for a certain number of years, did Playbill trading cards?
Yes. Yes, I did. I do remember. I did not. I never had any. I remember it though. But
do
I
you
never,
own them?
No, I wish. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
No.
So, ladies What's and the, gentlemen, I'm going to tell you a very geeky story, and then I need your help. That's my campaign slogan when I run in 2020.
All right.
Rob Schneider for president. I need your help. I don't know if anyone will vote for me. So, okay, folks. When I was a kid, the day after the Broadway season ended back in when I was a child in the 80s, it used to end like on May 31st, and then like either the day of the Tonys or the day after the Tonys, they would put out a trading card series. And what it was, ladies and gentlemen, was it was a playbill from – it was like the size of a baseball trading card, maybe smaller because I've never seen a baseball card. I didn't play with them.
Shaking my head.
And it was the cover. I'm going to show Kevin right now. It was the cover of the Playbill. See that, Kevin?
Yeah.
I'm holding up the life one.
My friends in college had them because I was in college in like 98, 99. Yeah.
And then when you flipped said card over, it was the title page of the Playbill.
That is so cool.
So it told you the opening night, and it told you who was in the cast and all that stuff. But if a show opened during that season, it had a Playbill card. So at the end of the season, you would buy the cards. So when I was a geeky little child, remember, because I started watching the Tony Awards when I was 3 years old, one of the big highlights for me was that my parents would take me to Schubert Alley. Right. And at the checkout counter, there was a little small brown wicker basket, and that's where all the Playbill cards were. And so every year, my mom and dad would take me to Schubert Alley. I'd buy the cards, and then it was very important. My dad had to do this correctly. We lined up the streets in our living room, and he would lay out, like, this is the Ethel Barrymore Theater, and that card would go there. So I could have a whole overview of the season.
Like and would you put the Ethel Barrymore like on 48th Street or wherever it is, and make sure that it was 47th, and put it on the right street and everything. So you had God, I love you, Rob. Oh man,
how dare you even? How dare you even ask? Of course. How would you? Okay. So anyway, friends. So I'm looking now. We moved away, and then it was always such a treat because my uncle Irving was the one who was tasked to go and get them for me when we were living in California. And
eventually bless you, Uncle Irving.
So I missed a whole bunch. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is a tradition. I know nothing about how these cards came to be. I don't know anything of the history of the cards. Every time I Google it, all that comes up are the Lights of Broadway, which is the new series that they do where they actually put people's illustrations like on cards.
Right, Squib.
Squib, yeah. Which is genius. Yeah. So I'm looking at one says this is the 20th series for the 1996-1997 Broadway season. So that means they must have started in 76-77.
Oh, my goodness.
So, folks, if you've got any of them and you're willing to either A, part with them, B, sell them, or C, let me know the history of these cards and why they how they came to be and why they stopped. Please, please, please let me know. Tweet me at Rob W. Schneider. That's my tweet, or at Broadway Curtain, so Kevin and I can both see it. And let us know if you have any of these. And I'm going to post photos. Look, Kevin, Into the Light.
Oh,
from 1987.
Goodness. Oh, that's old too. That's he's holding it up in Skype, and it's like the corners are fake. I mean, that's an old baseball card or playbook card.
Right? I'm looking.
I didn't know that it lasts that long. I'm shocked that it was that many seasons. There's got to be somebody over at Playbill that knows something about this. Look at that grind. He just held up the grind.
So any show that opened that season was put on one of these little cards.
Question, what's the oldest one you have?
You know what's so funny, Kevin? I'll tell you why. I'm looking at them now. Oh, I found a male one from the Michael Rupert musical.
M-A-I-L.
I'm looking because I have a huge bin at my parents' garage that has all of these, like, all my old things in it. And so I was going through, and I'm like, what is this, like, pack of cards? And I was like, oh, my God. It came back as a flood of memories. So I want to see if I can get the rest. What are the oldest ones I have? I'm looking, Kev. I'm looking, and I will keep looking.
This is such a good favorite thing, Rob. I have to, like, tip my hat to you today.
It must be 1985. Because that's the oldest one I have, the 84-85 season. Because I'm seeing things like, sorry, everybody. I know Dan is really fun.
I know, it's like watching. But have you looked on eBay?
No, I should.
You should look on eBay.
Maybe 80. I have Three Musketeers on here. Yeah, this it must be 85. It must be 85.
Is it in plays and musicals, or is it just musicals?
Any show that opened that season.
Oh, Quilters. Yeah, there you go.
Right? Any show that opened on Broadway that season gets acknowledged with a card. Do you see what that says?
Look at that. Stephanie Mills.
Comes home to Broadway.
Home to Broadway. Home in quotation marks.
When
because
I think
hello.
Of home.
That's right.
Love overflowing. So anyway, I feel like I have more somewhere, and I'm going to keep looking for them. So folks, if you've got any and you're willing to part or willing to sell or willing to give me any information on how these cards came to be or why they stopped, please let me know. Please.
I love it.
I can't beg you enough.
I can't wait for you to get your complete collection.
I hope. I really hope.
You know, and I'm now thinking of like when I go to the Broadway flea market, and I often will see a couple of them here and there, but I can't think of the last time they've really popped up anywhere. So
I can't. They obviously stopped.
Help us out. Yeah. Help us out, people.
Please, people, help me.
Look at Rob. I'm watching you guys. I'm watching Rob. He's like a little kid with his collection, and he's filtering. He's playing with them and going through them, and it's funny.
You're going to have me do this at the home. It's gonna be so like, sad.
Rob, you want to play bridge? Nah, I'm playing with my cards today.
I'm playing with my cards. Anyone see?
Got two.
My Senator Joe card. Oh, that never opened on Broadway, so we don't have
Leroy.
It. I'll trade you a Leroy. Oh my gosh. So anyway, folks, this is my stack of cards. If anyone can help me, that would be great.
Oh wow!
Look, Kev.
Make Robbie happy. Starlight Express.
There you go.
Must confess.
Yeah, so there we go. So that's it. You probably will hear more things because I'm going through this nostalgia trunk and like, I posted my first headshot today.
You did?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Did you see it? It's on Instagram. It was in 1996. Denim was in. I'm literally
black
wearing...
and white. Black and white.
No, I posted the color one.
Hold on. Let me find you.
I know we weren't supposed to have color back then, but I posted my color one anyway. It's a denim.
Oh, wow. How old are you in this?
I was 13.
Wow. You're quite the, you look like very mature for a 13-year-old. I mean, the denim's aging you a little bit, I must say. But
folks, it's jeans, a denim button down, a gray
Trevor
blazer.
Nunn, eat your heart out.
Trevor Nunn, eat your heart out.
That's his uniform. Denim and denim, always.
Is it really?
Yeah. And he yeah.
Thanks, Trevs.
And it's probably the same shirt that he's worn for like the last 20 years. That's amazing, Rob. Absolutely amazing.
So anyway, Playbill trading cards, help a brother out. Help a friend out. If you got them, send them my way. If you're willing to give me more information, let me know. Playbill, do you have any information?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And if you want to just smile, just go to Rob W. Schneider on Instagram and fall in love, okay? That's all I'm going to say.
I look good.
Drink it up. Drink it up, everybody. I mean, it's a little creepy. I'm saying this about a 13-year-old, but, you know, hey. You look at least 20 here, so, and I know, you know.
That was the issue I used to have.
Look too old?
Yeah, they were always like, I would be put in like high school shows, like TV shows.
Yeah.
And then they were like, okay, well, he can stay later because he's obviously over 18. And I'm like, no, I'm not over 18. Like, oh, darn it, you have to go.
Wait a minute. So you actually went on professional auditions?
Oh, yeah.
Rob, I didn't know this about you.
Oh, yeah. It's a long story. You want to hear it really quickly?
I think I will speak on behalf of the listeners and say, yes, we do want to hear this. I never knew that you were in the showbiz as a child actor.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay, everybody. Here we go. Into it right now. Here we go. So when I was 12 years old and I was in junior high, my parents got a letter that had Mario Lopez on the letter.
Oh.
And it said, somebody has recommended your child to come down to the O'Brien Rotman Talent Agency. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, that is O'Brien Rotman Talent Agency. To come on down because we think your child is an actor and would be really a good fit for our company. So I was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. Oh, and the big perk was you got to meet Mario Lopez. Slater from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
Went down there. There was at least 1,000 other kids there who all got the same letter. They had you wait in line. They took a photo with you. They did a quick little interview with you. And then they had you read like a commercial copy. And then on the way out the door, you got to sign and you got an autographed copy of Mario Lopez's photo. How nice of Mario.
No Mario, just no. Like,
Then a week later, we got an email being like, your child is very talented. We would like to represent them. This was very exciting for my family and me because it was like, oh my God. They must think I'm good. Well, anyone who went that day got a letter. Didn't realize it at the time. So they sent us to a talent agency, a management company called March Hair Management. That was the name of the company, March Hair Management. I don't know if any of these companies, for legal reasons, are still in business.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see if they are. So we went, and they were like, well, you have to get headshots with this photographer. And we won't even send you out on an audition until you take a year-long acting class with these specific teachers. So what I thought was my road to stardom was actually what we call a scam. Allegedly. I'm going to say allegedly because I don't know if these people are still in business. But I'll never forget this. I took an acting class, and it was a commercial acting class. And she was like, okay, Rob, you're going to sit here and read the copy. And I swear to you, I said, this isn't funny. And she said, what? I said, this isn't funny. I said, because I'm 12 now, by the way. I go, there's no button to the commercial. I said, it just sort of drifts off. I said, so let's do this. I said, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to add a couple of things at the end if that's okay. I swear to you, this is all a true story. I'm 12 years old. And she goes, oh, okay. And I said, is it a two shot? She said, yeah. I said, no. I said, when I say this line, pan into her. I said, because then you'll hear my voice. It'll be funnier. So I did. I swear to God, I don't know where this arrogance came from. This is all a true story. I don't know where this came from. So I did like 3 classes with this lady. And one day she goes, are your parents picking you up? And I said, yeah. She goes, I'd like to speak to them after class.
Uh-oh.
So it was me and this woman. And she said, listen, she goes, I'm going to be honest with you. This is a racket. She goes, none of these kids in here are any good. She goes, but your son is. She's like, so if you're smart, you'd get him out of here and get him with a real agent.
Wow.
That's wow. So I went on auditions. I went on a bunch of child.
Oh, auditions. So you did get a real agent then, and you pursued it.
I did, but I didn't like it. I didn't like film and TV. I found it really boring. I was in a couple of movies. I can't believe I never told you this. I did a bunch of
Levi's. I can't believe it either.
A bunch of Levi's jeans commercials that were only aired in Denmark and Sweden and Holland.
Now I feel like you're making this up.
I swear to you. Denmark, wow. Sweden, and Holland. But my favorite one, can I tell you my favorite story?
Yes.
And then we'll move on to your favorite thing, which is apparently today.
No, this is my favorite thing.
I was called for background work because that's like how you get your foot in the door. And they were like, okay, you have to show up to this high school tomorrow. And you have to dress like in normal clothes, like a normal high schooler. I said, okay, great. So I go in. I'm like 15 years old, chubby little white kid. I go in and I'm like, hi, I'm here, Rob Schneider. And the woman who's checking me in goes, are you sure? And I said, this is the right place, right? She goes, yeah. She says, your name's on the list. She goes, well, this is bizarre. Okay. She said, go in and wait with everybody else. So I go in and wait with everybody else. Everybody else is 299 African American kids. It was a music video, I believe, for LL Cool J.
Nice.
And in the music video, it was supposed to be like he was at this high school, and these kids in the high school were like running around celebrating LL Cool J, and he was on a motorcycle. But it was all supposed to be actors of color. And accidentally I was called into all this. So I said, well, what do I do? And the assistant director was like, well, he's here. We need the body. We'll just put him in the back. I've never seen this music video, but apparently you'll see like 299 kids of color running down a hallway, chanting his name. And then one pudgy 15-year-old white kid, incredibly out of breath, panting and sweating.
Oh, thank you for that.
But I'll tell you when I got out of the business.
Yeah?
When I was told by a director I was too ugly.
Oh, Rob.
To my face.
Oh, my goodness.
Here's the story, folks. I was called in for a television show that I will not name, Gilmore Girls. And it was me and two other guys. And all I remember was they were looking for someone to play a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And so we got called down to the Warner Brothers set, and it was me and two other guys, and we're waiting there. And it was either the director or the producer. We were behind their living room set, and he was on a 2-minute break, and he comes back and he looks at me and the other guy, and he goes, too ugly, him. And they gave it to the really good looking guy. And at that point I was like,
nope,
I'm done.
Yep.
I'm done. That's a true story. I was like, I'm done.
Good for you, though.
I'm done. Yeah. I was like 16, 17 years old. I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and be called unattractive. Like, that's you can think that, but I'm also like, I'm 17 years old. And that was one of the reasons I got into directing, because I was like, I don't want anybody to be treated the way a lot of these actors were being treated, the way I saw them being treated. It was atrocious. And this was all before Me Too and bullying and Twitter. It was horrendous, the things that I saw.
Wow. It's a good thing you got out then.
And I became a director.
I think it is harder for kids too. I think it's much harder because you're learning. It's still an impressionable age, and you're in a world of adults, and they're going to treat you like an adult, really. So I hated it.
Yeah. And there are some people who love film and television and they thrive off of it. I am not one of those people. You like
witnessing it. Like, you're the biggest movie TV buff I know, but as far as being in it, yes.
Because
you know, like you, it doesn't stop you from watching movies, you know, it doesn't stop you from watching all your TV shows, but just the being a part of the audition process and all that, that's interesting.
What's that thing that people say you don't want to see how the sausage gets made?
Yes.
I like the sausage. I just don't like seeing how it gets made. And that can be taken on many levels.
There you go.
As can I.
Well, yes. Oh,
thank you.
Well, my favorite thing is a movie today.
Oh, good. I'm happy I asked.
And it's not. So I don't know if you could have been in this movie, actually. I think you would have been too young to audition. This movie
I was
came
probably
out,
too ugly.
It was 1996, so you were definitely – well, you could have been – you know, you had been like 10 or something like that.
I would have been 13.
Okay. So maybe you auditioned for this Mike Nichols-directed film that I watched it again recently, and I had not seen it in a very long time. It is you probably already know what it is because we've talked about it recently. But I'm so struck by how much musical theater people are involved in this film. I'm talking, of course, of
The Birdcage.
The Birdcage. I think everyone should go and watch it again. It is such a great, and I know we already know this. It's hard because we say favorite things are things that are maybe perhaps lesser known or people don't remember. And this was a hit movie. I mean, I think it was a pretty hit movie.
It was a huge hit.
At the time, it was a big deal, especially because it was two loving gay characters that were not portrayed as the typical stereotypical, you know, they were human beings as much as they could do in a, you know, comedic film of set in Miami Beach, but they really treated their relationship very seriously and very lovingly. At least I think. And so I agree
wholeheartedly.
And Mike Nichols really, I read articles about, you know, how hard he really wanted to keep it authentic and real. In fact, he actually had Rick McKay, our Rick McKay, who we lost, who did the documentary maker, he had him go overseas to like France and do research on drag performers to present to Robin Williams and Nathan Lane to educate them on the culture and what it was like for them, which rocks my world that he was, you know, part of it, of the process. Of course, you all know the actors involved, Nathan Lane, Robin Williams, Hank Azaria, Diane Wiest, Gene Hackman. These are all great theater trained actors that I think it's really cool that they're all filmmakers. I mean, film people, but they all have their roots in theater. And I think that this film, you see that everywhere. I mean, I could talk about the orchestrations and arrangements done by Jonathan Tunick, who did all of Sondheim's musicals and all, you know, speaking of Sondheim, you know, I love this idea, Rob, that the song Sondheim wrote a song for one of the rehearsal sequences, The Little Dreamer. And then you get a full, almost an entire production number of Christine Baranski and Nathan Lane singing Love Is in the Air. And they do this whole little soft shoe thing of the song. That was a song that was the opening number that was cut from A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum before Comedy Tonight was put in there. So I love that this movie has this random cut Sondheim song thrown in there. Then it also has another song that was a cut song from Follies, Can That Boy Foxtrot? You know, and then I think it's so wild that we have Sondheim songs in there. What else was I going to say? That they treated these characters in these relationships with such, I get so choked up at the end with their relationship, Robin Williams and Nathan Lane's, and I think that it seems like they really valued it in a very, you know, authentic way. They wanted to really keep it true. And it's also it's just so freaking funny. I mean, like they said that Mike Nichols would let them have one take as long as the take was what's on the script. First take, good. And then you can watch them improv. I mean, there's one section where Rob Williams falls, or Nathan Lane falls, and Rob Williams totally starts laughing at him, and he's not supposed to, but it was an accident. He didn't mean to. It's just so – I love it. I love the playfulness of the film, and I love that it's a celebration of so many, many, many things, but it's connected to theater in such a beautiful way. So The Birdcage, I say go watch it and just smile. You're the whole time.
Little trivia for you.
Yes, please.
Who was originally supposed to play the two leads?
Oh, Steve Martin. No. And
you're absolutely right. Steve Martin.
I can't remember.
No, it was Steve Martin and Robin Williams.
That's right. And Robin Williams is going to play the other one, though, yep. Right?
Robin Williams is going to play the flamboyant one.
Right. When Steve Martin was going to be the more like, you know, the less flamboyant one. But that didn't work out. Do you know why was that? Do you know?
I feel like they had some sort of scheduling conflict at the end. I think that's the only reason. Wow. And so they moved Robin Williams up and then they moved Nathan Lane in.
Well, I'm glad Nathan Lane got to do a big, big film like that. He deserved it. And that, you know.
Yes. And also, I don't know why this person didn't get an Oscar nomination for this performance. Gene Hackman, I think, amazing. Is so funny in this film. And for somebody who mostly does drama, to watch him, that story about the leaves. You have to, okay, friends, if you want to see good acting, watch two scenes. Watch the scene about him describing what it was like traveling down. And boring, so boring, talking about the leaves. Watch him the first time. Then watch the scene again, but watch Diane Wiest as his wife sitting next to him, who has to be the supportive political wife. It is, and watching Gene Hackman fall in love with Nathan Lane.
Yes. In The Woman, like, yes, yes.
It's brilliant, folks. Yeah. His performance, I thought, was great. And also, shout out to Elaine May for a great screenplay based on the original, you know, yes. the foreign
and
film.
Costumes but still, by Anne Roth, theatrical.
Yeah, Anne Roth. Keep up that good work.
And Elaine May, of course. Hello, gosh.
Funny screenplay. Funny screenplay. Have you ever seen the French film that's based on?
I have not.
It's very different.
Is it?
It's very different. The French film, to me, and people can disagree, is a farce. There's no heart to it. There's no humanity. It's just a big old farce, which is very funny. This, I think, I find myself getting choked up.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they do a really nice job with it. What a good choice, The Birdcage.
Got to, yeah.
I love that. I love that. Good. All right, so The Birdcage, which I did not audition for. I was not asked to be in that. I was. They looked at my headshot, and he's like, he's too old.
Oh man!
Not what we want.
And if you come across any of those Playbill cards, pass them Rob's way. He's desperate. He wants to fill out that collection.
Yes, please, please. You guys have been so generous to us before. I'm asking again. I'm asking again for your generosity. Help me out. That's my campaign slogan. Once again,
I'd like that.
All right. Oh, and then Friday, we're going to drop a little teaser.
Ooh.
To something that we're going to be including in our Behind the Curtain show. We did a little teaser. So keep an ear out tomorrow for a new component that we're adding to Behind the Curtain that I think we're very excited about.
We are. Yeah.
All right. Okay, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard. So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.